Monster Professor.
Welcome to The Monster Professor, a show in which we discuss and explore monsters in literature, myth, film, games, folklore, culture, and beyond. I'm your host, Josh Woods, author, editor, professor, and monster expert. And today's guest watches more horror films in a single year than I probably have in my entire life. And he takes that love for monsters on screen, for horror films, and he turns them into some really amazing crafts. And he shows you how to do it as well. You might have already seen some of these on YouTube. I have with me Steve Ramsey from the YouTube channel Woodworking for Mere Mortals and from the Weekend Woodworker online courses. He is far and away the internet's most famous woodworker, and so he just so happens to also love Halloween and the dark side of things, and so I get to pick his brain on these. If you're at all interested in woodworking and these kinds of hobbies, you really have to check his stuff out. He really focuses on woodworking for everyone, no experience necessary, and most importantly, no huge woodworking shop and woodworking budget necessary. He'll set you up on all the essential tools you need for under $1,000. He can show you how to work with small spaces to no spaces. I mean, this guy was in an apartment in San Francisco dangling extension cords up to the roof where he was doing some of his woodworking projects early on, because he just started as a hobbyist and he turned it into a one-man industry. He's a mogul now, and I get to find out a little bit about that journey from him today, and then we get to get into his real love, secondarily, if not his first and foremost love, of monsters, of Halloween, of horror films. We get to find out from him what are some of the best horror films of all time, some of the best monsters on screen, what his thoughts are, maybe even some pragmatic advice when it comes to woodworking versus monsters. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you do too. Here's my conversation with Steve Ramsey. It's my huge honor and pleasure to speak with Steve Ramsey. Steve, thank you so much for joining me on The Monster Professor.
Hey, Josh, it's really exciting that you invited me to be on this podcast. This is the first non-woodworking podcast I've ever been on, and so naturally I jumped at a chance to talk about my second favorite topic, or maybe it's my first. I'm not really sure.
Well, yeah, most know you as perhaps the most famous woodworker on the internet, or maybe, I would say so. I was about to say maybe Nick Offerman is in the running, but the truth is you way outnumber him in at least in YouTube. You're sitting on, what, 1.4 million subscribers, I think it is?
Somewhere around in there, yeah.
And I think your top viewed episode is like 26 million views. Like all
it's
sorts of
crazy.
I know. Like all sorts of YouTubers would sell their souls to get those kinds of numbers.
And I would too. Nobody can predict when a video is going to be like that, though. You know, you get those viral videos, and it's like, oh, yeah. How did that one become viral? I don't know.
But you didn't sell your soul, and I think that's something we're going to get into in a little bit, because it didn't take me long as a fan of your woodworking show, and I learned so much from so many of your episodes, but it didn't take me long to realize, oh my God, this Steve Ramsey guy is seriously into horror and monsters and scary stuff and scary films, and you made some of your own episodes actually quite disturbing and creepy as well.
Oh, I love to hear that.
So that's when I started realizing that, I'm like, oh man, I really want to talk to him on this show. And so it's a great pleasure to get to do so. I figured we'll start out a little bit by letting everybody know how you got to this point before we start getting into these monsters and horror films. So, as far as I can tell, about 12 years ago, and a humble chessboard project as a hobbyist, and then
That's exactly where it started from. It was 2008, and YouTube was pretty new at that point. And I'd already been watching YouTube for a while, and I was also a woodworker. This, of course, wasn't my full-time job at that point, but I decided I wanted to build this chessboard, and I thought, you know, this would be a good opportunity to just document what I'm doing and then post it on YouTube and just kind of for fun, really. So it was like 7 really long, boring parts, because back then YouTube had a 10-minute time limit on videos. So I had to break up this really long video into this. It was so boring. But people started watching that, and it was pretty cool, you know, to see comments on something from people I didn't know. And so eventually I started to really identify what it was people were enjoying about my videos and kind of lean into that and explore the idea of making projects with kind of a rudimentary basic level of power tools that anybody could get for their own garage or basement or whatever. And so that was where I formed Woodworking for Mere Mortals a few years later. And, you know, the channel just sort of grew from that point. It was kind of funny because back then there were very few people who were making a living on YouTube. It was still just an amateur platform. But as more and more people started watching my channel, and I started spending more time on that, I was able to devote less time to my actual job as a graphic designer. So eventually I just kind of transitioned to making YouTube videos full time. And so that's what I've been doing ever since for about 12 years now.
Man, and so was there anything that you think flipped the switch to turn it from just a hobbyist YouTubing thing into a sensation, like you're a one-man industry at this point? How did that happen?
It was a very gradual kind of organic process for me. Today, a lot of people, you know, start YouTube channels with the idea of, well, this is exactly what I want. You know, they've got a whole business plan and everything in order and kind of really hyper-focused. Whereas me, I just kind of let it grow organically, just did what I was doing naturally. I had no intention of this being a full-time gig, but it was only when I discovered that I was earning, you know, more money, or I had the potential of earning more money on YouTube than I could with my graphic design business. And at that time in 2008, my design business was already feeling the effects of the recession. And so a lot of my longtime clients were no longer in business and I was losing clients. So it was really natural for me to start to spend more time on something else.
Yeah. I think one of the things that, you know, first attracted me just as a hobbyist viewer, like I would be embarrassed to show anybody my own woodworking projects as fun as they are. I'm an extreme amateur on that kind of thing. And so, but I was still intrigued by your videos. And I think one of the main reasons is that you're such a good teacher. Like I have a short tolerance for bad teachers and an extreme appreciation for good ones. And man, oh man, like it's seems like woodworking seems like one of those things that you wouldn't be able to teach so well online, but you figured it out. And I work at a college where, you know, we have woodworking or carpentry certificates and even degrees and a lot of carpentry, welding, a lot of hands-on projects, and they're hit like a lot of us in the country right now, at least in education, going purely online. And I thought, man, how difficult must it be for them? And then I thought, well, Steve Ramsey's figured it out. And so any advice for those, you know, looking at taking a hands-on type of thing like what you do and making it really effective through the medium of just online?
Yeah, I think that woodworking is kind of a good example of that. When I started in, you know, back in 2008, there was like 2 other people who were making woodworking videos, and now there's probably over 1,000 people doing that. But the advice I would have for anybody starting any YouTube channel is to have it really focused on your audience. Understand what it is you're trying to say. There's a lot of people making really good woodworking videos, but they don't really It's not clear what their focus is when people go to that channel. When people go to my channel, they know instantly, oh, this is a channel for beginners. In fact, it even says right on the channel, this is like woodworking for beginners, people with no experience necessary. So when I make videos, I'm always thinking about what would I need to show, what would I need to know if I was brand new looking at this, and think about that person and then make my videos and every procedure of that focus towards that person. I'm not interested in a person who has a big $100,000 workshop. They're not my audience at all. So I just know my audience really well, and that's where I point all of my attention towards.
Yeah, and that title, Woodworking for Mere Mortals, is so great because I myself feel like a mere mortal when I'm out there trying for the fifth time to cut a board in a somewhat straight manner and trying to figure out what wood glue is for.
Yeah, I came up with that title actually. It was kind of funny because I didn't know what to call what I was doing. I didn't want to just have woodworking for beginners or something like that, but I had kind of grown up on the only place where you would see any woodworking was on TV, and then it was on like really boring PBS shows or some of the DIY shows. But these guys all had these, you know, huge, you know, laser guided saws and all this equipment. And I thought, wow, you know, most people don't have all of that stuff. And really what I want to do is make a show that's accessible by anybody. And so that's when I just kind of thought, well, we're just mere mortals here working on this stuff.
And when you get into a lot of your projects, it doesn't take long before you see some really cool ones, especially coming out around the time of October every year.
Oh yeah.
And that's so cool. some of your Halloween projects or some of your horror related projects, man, they're so cool. You've got like functional pieces like a coffin and like the medieval stocks. You've got some awesome, like, you know, wall hanging pieces like a demonic door wreath or like the Rocky Horror Picture Show lips kind of thing. A really cool Jason's machete that it eventually incorporated to this really cool frame for a Fangoria magazine. But I think the one that I want to ask you about the most is this Ouija board that you did. Because first of all, it was absolutely gorgeous, and the pyrography, the wood burning you did on it was gorgeous too. But as far as I can tell, you lost a lot of viewers on that one. Like, that freaked people out. What was up with the Ouija board episode?
Oh, it was a channel killer there. That was so basically, all of my Halloween videos perform really poorly on the channel. It's just kind of such a specialized thing. So it's like, once a year I get a chance to really make video that I just really is self-indulgent and something that I'm really, you know, passionate about. And that has to do with anything with monsters and horror and, you know, anything like that is what I really want to lean into. And of course, I kind of get that opportunity in October. So a lot of them aren't for everybody, but I try to make them all fun or funny, at least to somewhat. But the Ouija board, wow. I sort of did realize some of the reaction I would get to that, because a lot of people are really superstitious and they really have these strong beliefs about, you know, that this is like a demonic item. And so like, I made this Ouija board and I just think it's the coolest thing ever. I think it just looked cool, the little planchette and everything was just awesome. And yeah, I definitely had some people like, well, I'm out of here, unsubscribe, never watching your videos again. I'm like, well, I don't believe this is real. Do you really believe this is going to? But, you know, so I don't believe in anything supernatural, but I love the whole aesthetic of it. But so once people, you know, I had a number of kind of complaints about the project in that video. Then for the next month or so, I made a point of having that Ouija board in the background of my regular videos. And so it was just like sitting back there. And then people would start to comment. And I still get these comments on those videos that people are watching. They go, what's with the Ouija board? What are you trying to do? And so then at one point I made a video where throughout the video, I would just turn the Ouija board in a different direction. And this is just in the background, so you really can't see much of it. But if you're close, pay close attention, you'll see it move. And then some people would ask me about that. And my response, you know, in those comments is always like, what? I don't see anything moving. What, are you seeing something? I'm not seeing. So I'm just like, I've become like such an internet troll with that Ouija board.
Actually, I found myself doing the same thing on campus. I in my office, I have a Ouija board up there just to freak people out. I think like there are much freakier things in my office, like a homemade velvet painting of Hulk Hogan that I found in the trash in Kentucky somewhere. Like, that's gigantic. But when they walk in and they see the Ouija board, a lot of students get freaked out. I'm like, it's Milton Bradley.
Exactly. This is a toy. I mean, it was kind of made famous by, I think, The Exorcist really kind of did the thing in there. But it's, I don't know. It's funny. I even mentioned that on this last year's Halloween video. I mentioned the previous year's video, which was the Ouija board video. And I'm like, wow, people really, you know, I got more comments on the Ouija board video than any other Halloween video, including like Jason's machete, which, you know, in the movie was literally designed in those movies to just hack away and murder people. Yeah. I mean, any complaints about that? No.
You've even done videos where you like fake chop off your own limbs, and they're not as freaked out about that as they are the Ouija board. I don't know. But I mean, that's another thing that's so enjoyable. I mean, that's what I mean about the lack of soul selling, as coincidental as it is with the Ouija board. But you're still doing what you love rather than pandering to a specific type of audience. So,
and I got to say, you know, that's a small minority of people who were, you know, kind of upset or freaked out over that video. Most of the people really enjoyed it. And most of the people by now, after this many years of doing this on Halloween and thereabouts, understand that I'm going to be doing these kind of videos. And, you know, if they're not into that, then just don't watch. And I think that it accounts for the numbers going down on those videos. They don't get very many views on the Halloween videos, which is kind of, for me, it's kind of a bummer because those are my favorite videos to make, and I have a lot of fun making those, and they're not intended as, you know, do-it-yourself videos, your how-to videos, instructional videos, even though they're sort of framed around that. It's really just, it's a chance for me to have fun and make something at least sort of cinematic, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, and even I mean, you're saying they don't, I think even in one of your videos, like, no one's going to watch this one anyway, I'm just going to do what I like, and you still got like 45,000 views or something, right. So that's nothing to sneeze at. I know you're a massive movie buff on top of this, like, yeah. And I find out how many movies you watch, like, I thought I watch a lot, but I don't come close to keeping up with them like you do, so I figured.
Watch hundreds every year. I watch hundreds of movies.
Yeah. God. Maybe let's just jump into some monsters and some movies and horror movies and stuff. Maybe I should just hit you with a simple and extremely mean, because it's so difficult, kind of question, however simple it is. You've watched hundreds and hundreds of horror films. You love the dark side and the monsters. Where would you go if I put you on the spot and made you pick your pick for the best monster on the silver screen, like the best monster out of movies?
Best monsters. Well, I guess that's yeah, that's one of those questions. Like, you know, I'm on woodworking podcasts sometimes, and people ask me what my favorite tool is, and I'm like, oh, it depends. But I think if I had to pick favorite monster, kind of there would be a couple different categories. My go-to answer would fall in line with what I think is probably my favorite horror movie of all time, which would be the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So I would kind of think, as a monster, I would say Leatherface is pretty damn cool. And it's also, I like kind of all the, you know, iterations of Leatherface, where he goes kind of through this like transvestite phase and, you know, the Next Generation and all these different, but the original Leatherface, I think, is pretty cool. If I had to pick like a specific monster, and this is going to be very specific, is Lucio Fulci's Zombie
movie. Oh man.
Yeah. And it's the zombie with the worms coming out of his eye. And that one, it was on the cover of Fangoria magazine way, way, way back. And I remember watching that and just thinking, this is the creepiest thing ever. I just loved that monster. It was amazing. But I have to say, you know, I think that, and this actually is what probably got me into horror movies, goes back to when I was probably around, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old. And I was in Springfield, Illinois. I was staying with my uncle and my aunt and uncle. And my uncle had this really cool, like shed. It was more than a shed. It was like a separate little house, but it was his thing. Back today, they would call it like a man cave, I guess. But he would show, he had movie projector in there. It was really cool. This was back in the 70s. And so he would show 8mm and 16mm films, but he had this collection of monster movies, and he had, but the one he showed me, and I remember this so vividly, this is going to sound really dumb, but it was Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. So this was, and for anybody who's much younger than I am, they may not know Abbott and Costello was a comedy duo back in the 1950s. And so they did this series of monster movies with Universal Monsters. And I don't know if they did a series. Maybe they did a series. But I know they had Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. But there was one scene in that. And it was the like a casket was opening. And it had Boris Karloff playing the monster. And it had that hand, just his hand, coming up out of this box. And I don't know why I remember that so well, but I was so fascinated with that. I thought, this is so creepy. And then as a kid, I got really into Frankenstein's monster and all of those things. I got this book. It's like one of these scholastic books you get when you're a kid, like how to make your, do your own monster makeup. And I remember doing Frankenstein's monster for Halloween, where I made my own using like a paper bag for the head, you know, and painting it. And it looked really dumb. But at the time, that was definitely, he was my favorite monster. But now looking back on it, it's like, well, I don't know if that's, any of those monsters are all that scary anymore.
But I don't know. I mean, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, that one still holds up, actually. It's still enjoyable to watch.
Years.
What was Halloween like as a kid in the 70s? Or what was Steve Ramsey's Halloween like?
Well, it was pretty much the same as most kids back then. It was just finding a cool costume, going out with a bunch of friends, and spending. I think the one thing that's changed from today is I know we took our son out trick-or-treating, and he's, you know, 22 now, but when he was little, we would take him out, and it was much more of a kind of an orchestrated event where families would go out with their kids, and there was like certain neighborhoods near where I live where, you know, they're like Halloween neighborhoods. People just really go all out for Halloween. And but when I was a kid, it was just like, you know, four or five of us would get together and we're like, okay, we got to go bike. And we would just leave and just go roam the neighborhood. And we'd be gone for hours. In fact, I remember a couple times filling up a bag of candy and having to bring it home, dump it out, and go out for more.
Yeah, I think I might have been one of the last generations to be like a free range Halloween kid. So like when I had some of my younger students asking after watching a Stranger Things episode, like, is that what Halloween was like in the 80s, where all the adults just said, you just go out in the dark, kids, and in costumes and just do whatever? I'm like, yeah, it was. It really was. It's not like that anymore. I feel like a magic is lost. I don't know.
There was still all of the rumors and legends that went around it. You know, there'd be razor blades or tainted candy or something. And that was kind of part of the thrill of it, I guess, thinking that even Halloween 2 actually alludes to that, where they had at the very beginning has the razor blade he's bitten into in the apple. But I think even then, like, we knew that, well, this wasn't really true. It was just like stories. You know, it was like nobody we knew would do that.
Yeah, but man, they freaked me out so much. Like but it wouldn't stop me. I don't know. Was there a monster that scared you as a kid in particular?
I think that for some reason, I remember going through a period where vampires really freaked me out, and I remember also going back to the old Universal Monsters, Bela Lugosi's Dracula. just the whole tone of that movie and the way he carried himself. Yeah, totally freaked me out a lot. I also remember seeing Creature from the Black Lagoon, and I love looking at that huge rubber suit and how kind of cool the whole aesthetic is. But at the time, that, I don't know, is it something about that also just captivated me?
Yeah, that original Bela Lugosi Dracula, I don't know. It's just become so iconic. I don't know if enough people appreciate how beautiful and masterful that film is. I mean, that really holds up well, too. And the performances are amazing in that.
It is. And I think even today it's almost weirder because it was right at the beginning of talkies. So the sound quality was really bizarre and awkward. And it just today, it just kind of works. It's like almost they intentionally made it clunky or something, but you know, they didn't. They just the way it was.
Yeah. And Bela Lugosi and White Zombie too. And I know you even did a project on, created the sculpture of the castle in White Zombie, right?
Right.
Man, yeah, but I jumped way past your original answers because I gotta mention, Fulci's Zombie, that movie, that freaked me out so much. Just that image that you're talking about with the worms on the head. I mean, you watch that movie and you only then do you realize, wow, this guy actually visually understands a zombie. All the other zombies, as cool as they were in other films, don't really make you feel like this thing is a dead body out of the ground. But that movie does.
I think it's kind of funny because a lot of people, I don't know if they still kind of considered that, but at the time it was kind of considered kind of a ripoff of George Romero's Dawn of the Dead, and that he was just kind of cashing in on that. But it's really a totally different movie, and in some ways it predates Dawn of the Dead because it has kind of more of like the voodoo type zombies rather than the plague zombies. Oh, it's an odd mix. I love the zombie in that who attacks the shark.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. Moment. I forgot there was a zombie versus shark scene. Oh my God. I keep forgetting that. And every time I rewatch it, I'm just like, this is the greatest film of all time.
Yeah. Lucio Fulci had some really good movies. The Gates of Hell. I really liked that one a lot. And some of his others.
Oh man. It just the cover. I remember I have a stark memory as just a kid walking into a video rental store. These were, for our younger listeners, these were stores in which you had to rent movies and bring them home to watch them physically. And I saw the cover box of Zombie, and I had nightmares for weeks just glancing at the cover box.
Oh, totally. Yeah, you know, those VHS cover art was everything. I mean, oh my gosh, there are so many movies who's really made their mark in the VHS market, and I'm sure Zombie was one of those because, you know, that and maybe like Maniac, and there's some really those really memorable covers that just, they just so entice you to want to see that movie.
Yeah, it was a big part. It was a big part of the project is getting the poster right, getting that cover for the movie right. Yeah, And about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like the first time I saw that bone room where we take that really slow look around all those bones in that room. Oh man, that's a special room in my nightmare world for me. Texas Chainsaw Massacre is amazing.
It totally is. And that scene is probably one of the best scenes in the movie, really, because it kind of gives you also a glimpse into Leatherface, because he's kind of confused about everything that's going on in there. And you almost get like this glimpse into a guy that's just not all there. Almost see into the actual person there. I think that's what disturbs me the most about Leatherface.
Yeah, that sunset scene you get when he's swinging the chainsaw around toward the end. You can't really tell. I can't really tell anyway whether it's just a rage filled, I want to kill you, or if it's like a King Kong, like, oh, my love has left me kind of thing. Like I can't tell what he's feeling there. He's a strange mystery, Leatherface is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love the remake too. I think the remake is really good. As much as I love the original, man, that remake is a good film.
God, I don't think I've seen the remake actually. I'm going to check this out. I just to corner you on one movie, because I haven't really got to talk with many people about this one, but it's one of my favorite of the 21st century, I think. And I think it's just absolutely amazing. It might be up there with my top 10 horror films of all time, but Robert Eggers made a movie called The Witch a few years back. And I've seen you with a t-shirt of it before in one of your videos is one reason I bring it up to you. What are your thoughts on The Witch?
Yeah, okay. I would place The Witch as one of the greatest horror movies ever made. It's definitely in my top five. It could pretty much be close to one or two. I love that movie so much. I think that was... The Witch kind of ushered in this whole kind of a new era that we're in horror right now, of a much more, you know, thoughtful horror films, more paced. You know, I don't really want to use the term slow burn because it's kind of thrown around, but it was kind of a slow burn. And I loved everything about that. Maybe it's just because I'm getting older. I really appreciate these movies that just try to reach me at a real visceral level. And that was one of those movies that just blew me away. And I've seen it several times since then. And I love it every time. That's hard hitting movie, I think.
Yeah, I guess I get some of the hate for it that came out, but because you have to be the ideal viewer to really get the most out of it. I mean, I have to turn the subtitles on because I can't really pick up on what they're saying. Their accents are so thick, even though they're speaking English technically. But then once you have the subtitles on, you can see how beautiful the language is. And it's pulled, a lot of it's pulled directly from journals and witch hunting accounts or witch accounts from the era. It's just so gorgeous.
Oh, absolutely. And this is, we're just in this new era with these young filmmakers, him and I'm drawing a blank, who made Hereditary and Midsommar. Ari Aster.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, both of those guys are really kind of carving out a new path for horror. And even Robert Eggers' follow-up, The Lighthouse. You know, it's like, is it a horror movie? Is it not a horror movie? I don't care because it's just so cool and so weird, and I love that.
Yeah, that was an amazing thing too. It was a beautifully horrifying or disturbing vision of a mermaid as well. I guess I have a little bit more love for I'm biased towards witches, and I had to write a whole novel about them just because there wasn't enough witch stuff for me to consume. I'm big into the witches, but man,
Have you seen Hagazusa?
No.
It's the German film about a witch, and I would highly recommend that one. It's on Shudder right now, and that's another film that also has that really slow, deliberate pacing, and I think that one's really good. It's very reminiscent of The Witch.
Oh, I've got to check that out. Thanks for that lead, man. Because, The Witch, very quickly I realized I'm not safe in this film. Like, anything can happen, and I don't get to just go, oh, the character is just hallucinating or is going crazy. Like, no, this is all, anything could be happening in the next scene, and I'm not safe. But that's that tough balance. Like, in The Lighthouse, as soon as you introduce kind of madness or hallucination, I think it kind of makes it a bit safer, and that's just a tough balance. I think Kubrick's The Shining balanced that out really well. You can have both, like it's for real and you have madness, but
right.
So what would some of your best horror films be of all time then, since you've got a catalog of hundreds in your mind, and The Witch would be up there. Maybe a few other favorites that you might pick out?
I mentioned the Hereditary. Definitely, I love Hereditary, and that's just a couple of years ago that one came out. Let's see, Let the Right One In. I don't know if you've seen that, the vampire movie from, I guess it's Sweden? No.
I don't know this one. Let the Right One In.
Yeah, Let the Right One In. Really, really love that movie a lot. I really liked Paranormal Activity and all of those movies. I think that those had a really cool, creepy vibe to them. And I love the. I also love movies like that that are just made for nothing and then just blow up. And I think that one hits all the. Oh, I know a movie that I think is super creepy. It is Wreck, the Spanish, I guess, kind of a rage zombie type movie. It's a. Also, found footage kind of film. Have you seen Wreck?
No, I haven't. I'm making a big list here.
Wreck is one of my. Oh, Saw. I like all the whole Saw series. Yeah. Is one of my. One of the things I'd love to make is one of those reverse bear trap jaw things from Saw. I think that would be. That would be really awesome. Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot. Oh, Tucker and Dale versus Evil. That's a really funny one. One of my favorites.
That shouldn't be as good as it was, but so many of those kind of spoof horror movies that end up becoming the real horror movies. They're spoofing like Leslie Vernon Behind the Mask as well.
Right.
Like they shouldn't be as good as they are, but they're fantastic films. Yeah, you know, as much as I am into monsters and as much as monsters dominate so much of my reading and my thinking and my writing and my viewing, I really don't end up getting into kind of the slasher, the slasher chopper or Saw.
Right.
Kind of things, and I know that, you know, when people talk about the horror genre, that's for a lot of people, that's the first thing to come to mind, and you're deep into that, and I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are on the appeal of the films in which the horror has a lot to do with getting body parts chopped up, and I wonder if there's any connection to deep fears as a woodworker.
Well, that's an interesting. Don't lose my fingers. No, I don't think that the slasher is my favorite genre of horror these days. I think at one time I was really much more into that, into the Jason and Michael Myers and all of that. And even though I've done a lot of, you know, Jason projects and those kind of woodworking related things, it's just because there's things that are associated with those, you know. I mean, there's actual machete that I can make. But I think that I think people got attracted to those because it was one step closer to reality than Godzilla or King Kong. Those are kind of a little bit more removed. But when you can kind of imagine that it's that actual person, you know, doing the killing. I mean, this probably goes back to Psycho, probably before Psycho even. You know, it was just like that's kind of a scarier thought. And I know that I also have gone through I still am really into zombies too, as far as, you know, just flat out monsters, even though that's kind of, I think that ship is starting to sail for the zombie movies, but I've always liked all of the Romero's and I like his movies and I like just the concept of this whole, you know, it's you against practically the entire world and trying to take them on. But yeah, maybe I am a little bit afraid of losing a finger on my table. So.
Yeah. So where do you think? I mean, that makes a lot of sense, I think. But where do you think your drive toward the dark side came from? Like, why horror? What took you in that direction and made you fascinated with these kinds of things?
That's a question I've thought a lot about myself, and I don't think I have a good answer. I think that there's parts of it that it's a lot of different things that combine. I think when I was a kid, they scared me, and I liked that feeling of it's the roller coaster scare. You know, it's scary even though you know it's 100% safe. And so I think that was a lot of it. And then as I started getting older and, you know, I started reading horror magazines and I got really into the special effects. And then that was like really curious about how the actual movie and the monsters themselves were created. And that kind of occupied a lot of my time. And I would find myself watching movies to see who did the special effects and how they were made, and being more attracted to that. And then as I get older, I'm still interested in special effects, but movies, I'm just so desensitized. movies don't really scare me anymore. But, and I think this is why I'm more into these more deliberate films now, is because what really can disturb me is a well-told story that kind of gets under my skin with characters that I can believe in and follow.
That's cool. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a clear line of kind of progress. You start off with this kind of sensory, visceral attraction, and then get fascinated with the craft, and then finally the true art of it. Is that kind of how your woodworking life has gone too?
Yeah, it kind of is. And I guess it's, you know, a lot of what I like about horror too is just the visuals of it. And so it really kind of, it makes sense through my entire career, going from a photographer to being a graphic designer to making woodworking projects to shooting video. These are all visually related kind of creative endeavors. And so anything that has this visual appeal and aesthetic to it, I'm really drawn towards.
Yeah, and you've kind of turned that into some serious visual art as well. Like, even just, I'm just thinking back on one of my favorite episodes, that Ouija board project that you were doing. Like, there are moments in there that are genuinely disturbing when you're sanding the Ouija board in the dark, and there's like these figures moving in the background that are kind of like Jacob's ladder types of thing. Like, you can't quite see what they are, and it makes it that much scarier. And you're just sanding in silence, except for the scrape of the sandpaper over the wood. And then you look up from the dark for the longest time, and then I'm like, oh shit, what's gonna happen, what's happening? And then you go back to sanding. I'm like, oh man, that was legitimately creepy.
I'm so glad to hear that you say that, because that's really, I love doing that. And I think I guess it's just because I have seen just hundreds, thousands of horror films, and I know kind of what they should look like, and I kind of understand this, you know, base level of tension and how to create that. I don't know if I really have all of the tools to do that properly, but in my shop with the camera I have, I try to recreate that in my Halloween videos. But at the same time, I have to recognize, okay, there's got to be kind of a funnier element to this as it goes on. Otherwise, it just is like, oh, this is depressing. But yeah, I love doing that. I love kind of creating those scary moments, especially on a channel that is a DIY woodworking channel. You know, it's like, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but I just have so much fun. And so much fun kind of crafting those videos. It's really a blast. I mean, secretly, I would just do that all the time, you know, if I could.
Well, I've got a huge request for you then. I want you to make your own indie horror film, like The Woodworker or something, and just go all in and make it a short one even. No, it's like a 60-minute horror film, and put all your experience into it, because I think you could seriously do it.
I could expand. I made one a while back. This is probably 7-8 years ago. I did this woodworking for Mere Zombies. And so the kind of the subtitle of it was, it's an all new brainless DIY show for your undead lifestyle. So I was really, what I wanted to do was just kind of poke fun at these HGTV and these DIY channel shows where they show you how to make really kind of dumb projects. But I thought, well, what if you were a zombie and you were trying to do this woodworking show? Well, naturally, you're going to end up cutting your fingers off, and you're going to just do all this really. So he ended up, like, you know, painting the project with blood and things. But that was kind of the first one that people, like, just did not like, because it was just kind of gross. And I loved that whole thing, like peeling the skin off my face. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you've even got to meet the master of that. Didn't you get to meet Tom Savini, the master of this?
I did, and that's why I made that frame for it, because I've been a subscriber to Fangoria since like day one, basically, my whole life. And so I had him sign an issue which was from Friday the 13th, the final chapter, which is, he often kind of cites that as one of his favorite movies that he worked on. And so that was really cool to meet him, get a picture with him, and then have him sign that. So that I made the frame for it. And then I made two Jason machetes, and I put one of them in that frame. So it looks like the machete is slashing into the frame, and then there's blood dripping out of the bottom of it. But those machetes I made those out of maple, which is a really hard wood, and I actually, you know, honed it down to that they're actually really sharp machetes. It's surprising how kind of deadly a piece of wood could actually be if it's sharpened down like that.
Yeah, you could have one in a vampire slaying kit. I think you could. Well, actually, I've had other folks on here before, those who are serious occultists and magicians or martial arts experts, and we can't seem to come to a consensus on whether or not you could actually drive a wooden stake through the human rib cage. And as a woodworking expert, maybe you would know the answer better than anybody. Could we get a wooden stake in through the rib cage into the heart, do you think?
And absolutely.
What wood would you recommend for that? And how the dimensions would you say are ideal?
I would definitely go with maple. Maple is like one of the hardest, you know, kind of commonly available woods you can get. And I would turn it so that it was round all the way around. I think a lot of the stakes that you see sometimes are more like, I don't know, like stakes that you pound into the ground that are more like rectangular shaped. I think I would want a round one, because then it doesn't really matter where you pierce the chest. It's going to kind of find its own way through that mess of ribs and bones and then right into the heart. But you might have to stab a couple times to get the heart right, but I'm okay with that.
You think we could do it without the hammer? You think we could just jab it on in there?
I think you would need the hammer. I think you got to have a hammer to go with it. Maybe, I don't know. I see people using knives. I mean, you know, why couldn't you use a knife? I mean, really, what's the difference between a knife and a steak other than, I guess, the material?
Yeah, in the book, they use knives on Dracula, so I guess it does work. But I don't know. The movies kind of written new laws.
As a side note, I assume you've read Dracula, the novel.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that book?
It was when I first read it as a kid, it would just absolutely blew my mind, and I was obsessed with it. I would go around talking in this terrible version of 1890s, kind of like late Victorian talk, just because I was so obsessed with it. And you know, every time I reread it as I got older, I found myself less impressed with it literarily. It's a bit clunky in places, especially starting off, but it is still, it's something really magical. Like, I don't know if enough people realize how revolutionary it was at the time. You know, in that not only was this concept of the vampire still kind of pretty new to a lot of readers, especially a wide audience. I mean, it was originally titled something like Count Vampire, and it was not a spoiler. Like, that's how little people knew of the thing. But it was also experimental in its form. Like, it was a mixed media book. Like, you got people's letters, their journals, the transcripts off of the wax cylinders, and then it does this weird thing with a narrative in which it just kind of transforms into an impossibly close perspective from Mina Harker, and it does a lot of beautiful things, and it leaves a lot of mystery behind Dracula that I think later films have tried to come in and solve for people. But what Dracula is, and why vampires are and what's at the heart of all of it. Really, in the book, it's an absolute mystery, and I think there's some magic behind that.
It sets out the groundwork that has been, replicated so many times. And it's interesting how many times that's been made into movies, and each movie disassembles that book in different ways and makes some characters more important than other characters, eliminates some of the characters, changes the story a lot. Some of them stick pretty closely to it. It's interesting how one novel can have that many different approaches in cinematically.
Yeah, like Francis Ford Coppola wants to see it as like a love story, and you can, but if you go into that novel not thinking love story, there's no love story at all. So, I mean, it is really interesting how much it lends itself to interpretation. I think that the Nosferatu film, the early German film, is probably one of my favorite kind of takes on it, though. It's just a gorgeous film.
I also love that the remake of that, that was 79 with Klaus Kinski in it. And that's also an early slow burn film. It's kind of, but I love kind of that plotting nature of that movie. And I love his version of Nosferatu, the way that monster looks is really cool.
Yeah, you get the full Werner Herzog experience of just sitting there and watching these amazing things, like that, like the ship kind of rolling into town while it's this dead ship and spending bats. lots of slow mo bats, and it's beautiful though, it really is. Oh my God! Well, I've pushed you well past 40 minutes or so. You've been extremely generous with your time. It's been a lot of fun talking to you. Maybe we can kind of start reeling it in with just letting not that there aren't enough people watching your stuff, but just in case we can send a few more people your way to check out, say, your Weekend Woodworker and your YouTube channel. Where should listeners go to find out more about you and your projects if they're interested?
Yeah, thanks. You can head over to on YouTube. You can just search for Steve Ramsey would be the easiest way, or Woodworking for Mere Mortals. Both of those will get you to my channel where you can watch lots and lots of woodworking videos. And if by some strange chance you're actually interested in learning woodworking and you've just been something you've been thinking about, hey, maybe I want to do that, I have created courses, online courses to get you started with very little investment, and you don't really need a lot of space. That's kind of the whole point of Woodworking for Mere Mortals, and those are over at theweekendwoodworker.com, and you can check out those courses to get you started.
Yeah, and you are the master of figuring out how to do it without space. Like, weren't you in an apartment while you started at one point, like dangling power cords up to the roof?
Yeah, it was funny. We lived in San Francisco for about 10 years before we moved. I live in Marin County now, which is just north of San Francisco. And when we were living in the city, we had a apartment. It was a 6-unit apartment building, kind of typical in San Francisco. We were on the top floor, and so I had access to the roof, so I could take an extension cord from the kitchen window and it would like dangle it down from the roof into the kitchen window, and then I could run power tools and I could build things up there. I even remember making a shelf for all of my VHS tapes at the time.
Did you hang on to them? I've got to know. The VHS.
I have some of them. And you know what I was doing? I was like, there's this store, it's in San Francisco. It was called Le Video, and they specialized in independent cult exploitation films and all these just really weird films that were really, you couldn't find anywhere else. And I think a lot of their copies were just bootlegged copies because the covers on them were like photocopies, you know, that they just like slapped on there. But I would take those and then I would just copy them. A lot of those, they didn't have any kind of VHS protection. So I would get these really obscure movies and then I would I would additionally photocopy their photocopy to make my own version of that VHS tape. So it was like, it was one of those really, you know, several generation copies of the tape, of the cover and everything. But it was something really cool about watching movies like that.
Yeah, that's something else that's kind of maybe lost a little. Some of the magic has maybe faded. Is the era when so much of the stuff wasn't so perfectly immediately accessible? Like you hear about some strange horror film, and you've got to work for months to even find a bootleg copy of it, even if you can. And yeah. Now everything's just at your fingertips. And I don't know. It kind of takes the quest out of searching for the dark corners of the film world. It kind of takes a quest out of it. I don't know.
It does. And it's not, you know, there's not the fun of displaying all of your movies when everything's, you know, video on demand. And, you know, I've kind of gone through that myself. I used to have lots of DVDs and I ended up just getting rid of them all. I kind of thought, well, I don't really need them. Anything I want is pretty much available online. So I know what's the point, but yeah, I do kind of miss that in a way.
Yeah. Goodness gracious. Well, I tell you what, it's been a fantastic time talking with you, Steve. I really enjoyed talking not only a little bit of woodworking and finding out a little bit more about your journey, but getting a fantastic list of horror movies I haven't seen yet.
I hope you check them out.
Yeah, finding out some cool ideas on your thoughts on these things. And now we have the answer, by the way, if we left you with nothing other than pragmatic knowledge of how to make your stakes if you plan on vampire hunting. Turn them around and use maple and have a hammer ready, and you're that much safer in the world now.
Hey, it can't hurt to be prepared, right?
That's right. Well, thank you so much again. It's been a real pleasure, Steve Ramsey.
Thank you.